Okay, once again, we are going to begin our study this morning of 2 Corinthians, which we were going to try to do last quarter, and we got to finish 1 Corinthians last quarter, and so we're going to get into 2 Corinthians this week. I know many of you were not here for our study of 1 Corinthians, and so let me, by way of introduction to this book, go back and talk about some introductory matters to this particular book of 2 Corinthians. Go back to Acts chapter 18 just to see a context and to see how we can have a good understanding of this book. In Acts chapter 18, Paul was on his second missionary journey. And on his second missionary journey in Acts 18, he comes to the city of Corinth at the beginning of the chapter. And Paul spends 18 months in Corinth. And while he is there, he establishes the church. As many people, in Acts chapter 18 and verse 8, the Bible says, many of the Corinthians hearing believed and were baptized. And verse 11 is the verse that tells us that he was there for 18 months and spends time in this city establishing and building up the church. What kind of city was Corinth? Say again?
Sinful.
Could anybody sin better than the city of Corinth? Well, you'd have a hard time figuring that one out. But they were a very pagan, evil city when it came to morality, and when it came to righteousness. What kind of city was Corinth? Somebody else said something. Say again?
Commerce.
It was a commercial city. It was a major trade route. It was said, and I guess you still hear it said, that all roads lead to Rome. Well, all commercial trade went through Corinth. And so when you have a city of commerce where you have ships coming in and out, you know what kind of, and this is not to insult any of you who may have this, but you know what kind of folk sailors are, right? They're interesting folks, to say the least, right? I'm trying. Interesting's not a bad word, is it? Interesting folks? People say that about me. They say I'm interesting. I never know if that's good or bad. That's what you're supposed to say when you want to be nice, right? Well, that's interesting. So here's a city. What kind of, was it a religious city at all? Oh, it was an idolatrous city. So when you talk about the religion of Corinth, it was a city that worshipped idolatry. It had one of those famous temples that we often talk about from that first century world. It had the temple of Aphrodite, who had various, well, they called them priestesses, lady priests who served at the temple. But there's another P word that better describes these particular priestesses, and that would be the word prostitutes. That was the, you know, that sailors in the first century, they were religious fellows, apparently. And they could not wait to get to Corinth so that they could go to the temple of Aphrodite, and there they would have a religious experience. Apparently with the priestesses, the 1,000 prostitutes who had married themselves to Aphrodite and gave their bodies to her service. What a sick and wicked city. You just have to use your imagination to live in that kind of a society, don't you? We wouldn't know anything about those who are warped in the direction of sexual and illicit sin. We would just have to really stretch our imaginations to be able to get over into that realm. You know, we may not have a temple of Aphrodite in America. But do we have a Hollywood? Do we have our own system in place in this nation where individuals have the opportunity to engage in whatever kind of behavior they want to engage in. So Paul comes to that city. Sorry, Paul, we don't have room for you. Paul, the gospel, Jesus, no. We don't have room for that kind of thing here in Corinth. We've got a better system. Well, no, the Bible says in Acts 18 and verse 8 that many of those who were there hearing believed and were baptized. Is it up to us to decide who are the ones who would be receptive to the gospel and who wouldn't? Is it up to us to identify, you know, that person might hear, or no, I don't even think it's worth going to Hollywood. I don't even think it's worth going to Corinth. They don't want to hear this anyway. Here were many of those people who lived in Corinth who were baptized, and the church was established there in Corinth. Do you suppose this church, do you suppose these Christians who are now in Corinth, do you suppose they'd have any growing to do? You think they'd have any growing pains? We just studied the book of 1 Corinthians. Is that a book that talks about growing pains in the church? Here was a very pagan group of people who had left idolatry to serve the true and living God. They had a lot of things to learn. They had a lot of changes that they needed to make in their lives. And so that's why Paul spent a year and a half there teaching them the pure gospel. And so after Paul left the city of Corinth on this second missionary journey, he made his way back to Antioch at the end of chapter 18. And then in Acts chapter 18 and verse 23, Paul began his third missionary journey. And while Paul is on his third missionary journey, you go over to Acts chapter 19. And in Acts chapter 19, Paul comes to the city of Ephesus, and he's on his third missionary journey when he gets to Ephesus. He spends 3 years in Ephesus. And while he's in the city of Ephesus, he writes the book that we just spent a few months studying, the book of 1 Corinthians. And the book of 1 Corinthians is written to correct a lot of the issues that the church was having. The first book of 1 Corinthians was written to address some problems that they were having. Apparently, the church at Corinth had sent Paul a letter asking him some questions. And so one of the purposes of the book of 1 Corinthians is for Paul to give some inspired answers to those questions that they had asked. And so Paul sends this letter of 1 Corinthians back to the church in Corinth. And when Paul sent the letter, we learned from 2 Corinthians that when Paul sent 1 Corinthians, he was a little concerned about how it would be received. If you were the one who had written 1 Corinthians, if you were the one who had written things like 1 Corinthians chapter 11, starting about verse 17, where Paul says, "And now these things I write to you, and these things I write to you, I do not praise you." And he begins to correct their misuse of the Lord's Supper. And he repeatedly says, "I do not praise you in this. You come together not for the better, but for the worse." When he writes things to them that are very pointed about worship to correct it, very pointed about marriage to correct some of their wrong ideas about marriage. When he wrote to them in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 about delivering the unrighteous man, the man who had married his father's wife, delivering such a one to Satan so that he could his soul could be saved and the church could be kept pure, Paul was a little concerned about how the letter would be received. If you had been initially on the receiving end of the book of 1 Corinthians, if you were in the church of Corinth and you gathered together on that day and one of the members stood up and said, "We received a letter from the Apostle Paul," and they began reading it, how would you have responded to that? Pardon? Return to sender. Put that back in the envelope. We didn't see that. We didn't hear that. Return to sender. You know, let him pay the return postage on that. We don't want this. Would you have been possibly offended by it? Would you have been possibly to react in such a, well, forget Christianity. You know, if there's going to be all these rules and regulations and all these corrections, and, you know, if Paul's going to get on our case every time we don't teach something right or do something right, you know, forget this Christianity thing. Paul was concerned. Look in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, where here's this book, and as I'm trying to introduce it, I'm jumping all over in my thoughts. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, we know this section, or at least we have heard this section talked about, where Paul, beginning about verse 23, lists a number of persecutions, a number of trials and tribulations that he had endured for the cause of Christ. And it's interesting that this is in the book of 2 Corinthians is where he lists that, and we'll talk about, if we have time, why it's interesting for that to be there. But drop down, as he lists all of these things in verse 24, that he had received five times, he received 40 stripes minus one. Verse 25, three times I was beaten with rods, once I was stoned, three times I was shipwrecked. He talks about all of the, verse 23 is where it talked about being in prisons and receiving stripes above measure. But verse 28 is where he says, besides the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. Paul had a deep and living concern for the churches that he had helped to establish. And when he sent the letter of 1 Corinthians, he had a deep concern for the church in Corinth and how they would receive the message that he sent. It's not that he thought that the letter should not have been sent, but he was concerned that maybe they would turn away. He was concerned that maybe they would turn away from their Christian life. And so he wanted to hear about what was happening with them. And so while he's waiting to hear, Paul's if you go back to Acts chapter 19, Paul is in Ephesus when he writes 1 Corinthians and sends it out. But you, if you start in Acts chapter 19, in verse 21, perhaps you have a paragraph heading, some kind of notation above verse 21. What do we begin to read about in Acts chapter 19, verse 21? A riot at Ephesus. What happens during this riot at Ephesus? Has anybody read this? Anybody know what happens? There was a certain man, verse 24. Verse 23 says, about that time, there arose a great commotion about the way. For a certain man named Demetrius, a silversmith who had made silver shrines of Diana, he brought no small profit to the craftsmen. He called them together, the workers of similar occupation. He said, men, you know that we have our prosperity by this trade. Moreover, you see and hear that not only at Ephesus, but throughout almost all Asia, this Paul has persuaded and turned away many people, saying that they are not gods which are made with hands. So not only is this trade of ours, what were they making? Well, they're responsible for idolatry. They're responsible for making the shrines to Diana. And he says, here's the problem. Our trade, verse 27, is in danger of falling into disrepute. But also the temple of the great goddess of Diana may be despised and her magnificence destroyed, whom all Asia and the world worship. We wouldn't want that. We wouldn't want the temple of Diana to be destroyed. We wouldn't want it to be despised. And for sure, we wouldn't want our own livelihood taken away from us. When they heard this, verse 28, they were full of wrath and they cried out, saying, not great is our God, not the Lord lives. Great is Diana of the Ephesians. So the whole city was filled, here's interesting, with confusion. Wouldn't you be? And they rushed into the theater with one accord. They seized Gaius and Aristarchus, Macedonians, Paul's travel companions. When Paul wanted to go into the people, the disciples would not allow him. Then some of the officials of Asia, who were his friends, sent to him pleading that he would not venture into the theater. Some therefore cried one thing and some another, for the assembly was confused and most of them did not know why they had come together. Isn't that interesting? Here was a great riot. Here was a great religious what can we call this? A great religious riot. And the people that came together, they didn't even know why they came together. Isn't that the case with riots sometimes? You just get people stirred up. You get their emotions churned. You bring them together and boy, they're all just riled up. Well, what are you all riled up about? Well, I don't know, but I'm riled up. Have you seen the riots on TV? Yes. Do some people just want a riot to riot? Yeah. Well, why not? That looks fun. They came together. They're confused. They don't even know why they're together, some of them. They drew Alexander, verse 33. They drew Alexander out of the multitude, the Jews putting him forward. Alexander motioned with his hand, wanted to make his defense to the people. When they found out that he was a Jew, all with one voice cried out for about 2 hours. Alexander wanted to speak. Well, we're just going to shout you down. For 2 hours, the crowd was yelling, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." When the city clerk had quieted the crowd, he said, "Men of Ephesus, what man is there who does not know that the city of the Ephesians is temple guardian of the great goddess Diana and of the image which fell down from Zeus? Therefore, since these things cannot be denied, you ought to be quiet and do nothing rashly. For you have brought these men here who are neither robbers of temples nor blasphemers of your goddess. Therefore, if Demetrius and his fellow craftsmen have a case against anyone, the courts are open and there are proconsuls. Let them bring charges against one another. But if you have any other inquiry to make, it shall be determined in the lawful assembly. For we are in danger of being called into question for today's uproar, there being no reason which we may give to account for this disorderly gathering." When he had said these things, he dismissed the assembly. After the uproar had ceased, Paul called the disciples there in Corinth to himself. He embraced them and he departed to go to Macedonia. Paul was there during this riot in the city of Corinth. This is perhaps, go to 2 Corinthians chapter 1. We don't know all of the background to what we're going to look at here in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, but this is perhaps the occasion that Paul had in mind. Look in 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and start in verse 8. Paul says, 2 Corinthians 1 and verse 8, "We do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia." Now, we don't know if he is referencing the riot in Ephesus. That was the last time he's writing 2 Corinthians. Remember, 1 Corinthians was written from Ephesus before the riot, before Paul had to leave. And so now Paul is writing 2 Corinthians. Maybe he is writing to them about the very occasion that forced him to leave Ephesus. And Ephesus was in Asia Minor. So he says, "I don't want you to be ignorant concerning the trouble, concerning the affliction, the tribulation that came upon us in Asia. Look at how bad it was." He says that we were burdened. The idea there is we were weighed down, we were crushed beyond measure. Can't even measure it. That's how much we were burdened. We were burdened beyond measure, above strength. It's beyond the normal power of somebody to be able to lift it, to endure it. That's how much we were burdened, beyond measure, above strength, so that we despaired even to life. They thought they were going to die. Yes, we had the sentence of death in ourselves. They were convinced that the verdict was going to be passed down. Paul may be referencing, perhaps it's one of his shipwrecks, maybe it's not the riot in Acts chapter 19. But Paul may be referencing what happened in the city of Ephesus. So when he left Ephesus, Acts chapter 20 and verse 1, where does the Bible tell us that he went? Where did it say? Acts chapter 20 and verse 1. Paul went to Macedonia. And while Paul was in Macedonia, right there at the end of chapter 20 and verse 1 of the book of Acts, while Paul is in Macedonia, he writes 2 Corinthians. What I'm doing is trying to put this into perspective for us. He's in Ephesus. While he's in Ephesus, he writes 1 Corinthians, sends it, and is awaiting to hear the report back. While he's waiting in Ephesus for the report to come back, this riot happens. Perhaps what he's talking about is 2 Corinthians, where they were burdened beyond measure and they thought they were going to die. So he's forced to leave Ephesus. So the report that he was waiting from Corinth and how the first letter had been received did not arrive when he was in Ephesus. He's forced to leave Ephesus and he goes to Macedonia. And while he's in Macedonia, right about this time, he writes 2 Corinthians. He writes this letter. Go to 2 Corinthians chapter 2. Look in verse 12. And you might want a map or something just to be able to pick all of this out. 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 12. Furthermore, when I came to Troas to preach Christ's gospel, and a door was opened to me by the Lord to preach the gospel there in Troas, I had no rest in my spirit. He was restless. Remember what we saw in 2 Corinthians chapter 11? What he had all of these bad things that happened, these shipwrecks, these beatings, these imprisonments, but what came upon him daily? His concern for all the churches. He was daily not just thinking about the churches, he was daily concerned about the condition of the churches. He gets to Troas, and perhaps, if you look at a map, of Asia Minor, if you look at where Ephesus is down near the coast, the southwest coast of Asia Minor, when Paul left Ephesus, he went to Troas on his way to Macedonia. He got to Troas, and Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, I got to Troas, and there was a door open to me to preach the gospel. But I couldn't walk through that door. It's amazing that Paul says there was a door there for me to preach the gospel, but I could not go through that door and preach the gospel. Why not? Well, what does he say in verse 13? I had no rest in my spirit. Paul was agitated. He was restless in his spirit. What is he waiting for? He wants to know, how was that first letter in Corinth received? He left the church in Ephesus. He came to Troas and could have preached, but the thing that is on his mind more than anything else is, how is the church in Corinth? Verse 13, I had no rest in my spirit because I did not find Titus, my brother. But taking my leave of them in Troas, I departed for Macedonia. I think this is the first time that you read about Titus in the New Testament, which is interesting that you get all the way to the book of 2 Corinthians. It's the first time you read about Titus in the entire New Testament. You go through the book of Acts, and you would think you read about Paul in Acts, you read about Timothy in Acts, you would think you would read about Titus in the book of Acts. You don't read about Titus. You have a whole book that Paul writes to Titus, but you don't read about Titus till you get to the book of 2 Corinthians. In fact, If you look up Titus in a concordance, the name Titus is found 13 times in the New Testament. 9 of those times are in 2 Corinthians. You wouldn't think that. You would think, no, it's got to be in Acts. No, it's got to be over. It's got to be mostly over in the book of Titus because that was written to him. 9 of the 13 times you read about Titus is in this book we're going to be studying this quarter. Why was he so instrumental? It's interesting the part that Paul, Timothy, and Titus all played with the church at Corinth. Paul went to Corinth in Acts 18 and established the church. Guess who was traveling with Paul on his second missionary journey? Timothy. So Paul and Timothy are there. Timothy is with Paul when he establishes the church in Corinth. Go back to 1 Corinthians. I know I'm jumping all over the place. This is fun. All right, go back to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 4. It'd be helpful if I told you a chapter. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 in verse 17. Paul, when he writes 1 Corinthians, writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 17, it says, "For this reason I have sent Timothy to you, who is my beloved and faithful son in the Lord, who will remind you of my ways in Christ." So before Paul even finished 1 Corinthians, he had sent Timothy to them. Go to chapter 16. 1 Corinthians chapter 16. But apparently it was going to take maybe longer for Timothy to get there than it took for the mail to get there. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever felt that your travel was taking so long that you could have just mailed yourself and got there quicker? Well, you probably don't think that. We live with you with some pretty, sorry Pete, some pretty slow mail systems around us today. Anyway, chapter 16. That was a low blow, wasn't it, Pete? Chapter 16, verse 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 10. If Timothy comes, see that he may be with you without fear, for he does the work of the Lord as I also do. Therefore, let no one despise him, but send him on his journey in peace, that he may come to me, for I am waiting for him with the brethren. Paul had sent Timothy, before he even finished 1 Corinthians, has sent Timothy to check on the church in Corinth. And he tells the church, when he gets there, receive him, and then send him back to me. So Timothy had come back to Paul, but he was not bringing back a report about how the letter had been received, because he was going to leave even before that report could be given. Titus comes into the picture in 2 Corinthians, because Titus is the one that Paul had sent to find out how was the letter received. And so when you get to 2 Corinthians chapter 2, and 2 Corinthians chapter 2 is where Paul said in verse 12 and 13, I was waiting for Titus, and I had to leave Ephesus because Titus hadn't got to me in Ephesus yet. Then I got to Troas, and when I got to Troas, I had to leave Troas, and I hadn't found Titus yet. And then he went to Macedonia. Go to 2 Corinthians chapter, go to chapter 7. Look in chapter 7 and verse 5. Try to keep all of this together in your heads. In Acts chapter 19 was the riot in Ephesus. Paul leaves Ephesus, goes to Troas. Acts chapter 20 and verse 1, he came to Macedonia. So in your head, you got Acts chapter 20 and verse 1, Paul comes to Macedonia. Now look in 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 5. For indeed, when we came to where? Macedonia. Acts chapter 20 and verse 1, when Paul comes to Macedonia, is the same time he's talking about in 2 Corinthians chapter 7 verse 5, coming to Macedonia. Now remember, he's waiting for Titus. Titus, come and tell me, how was this letter received? How is the church in Corinth doing? He was so restless waiting for Titus, he couldn't even preach in Troas. He goes to Macedonia. Indeed, when we came to Macedonia, our bodies had no rest, no relief, no peace of mind. Why? Well, chapter 2 told us. He's restless. He's waiting to hear from Troas. But we were troubled on every side. The word troubled there has the idea of being harassed on every side. Outside were conflicts. Inside were fears. Put yourself in Paul's place. Outside, he's dealing with conflicts. He has external pressure from these folks who are persecuting him. He has inside, he has fears. Perhaps these fears include the church at Corinth. Verse 6. Nevertheless, God. And I wanted to get to this morning. Hold your finger there. Go back to chapter 1. I know we're jumping all over the place. Hold your finger. We're coming right back to chapter 7. But go to chapter 1. Verse 3. 2 Corinthians. Sorry if I didn't tell you what book. 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 3. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all what? Well, God is the God of love. God is the God of peace. God is the God of all sorts of things described here in this chapter. He is the God of comfort. How much comfort? Can you get any comfort apart from God? Any comfort to be found? He is the God of all comfort, verse 4, who comforts us in some of our tribulations. He's the God of all comfort. What tribulations does He comfort us in? Every single tribulation we have, He's going to comfort us. We're going to come back and look at that, but come back to chapter 7. Once you see, that's not the first time in chapter 7 that Paul's talked about God comforting. He picks up on this idea of God being the God of all comfort in chapter 7, verse 6. Nevertheless, God who comforts the downcast comforted us also by the coming of Titus. Finally, he got word from Corinth. Finally, he got to hear a report about how that first letter had been received. And while he had been fearful, while he had been going through this troubled and restless period, he says, we were finally comforted when Titus came, not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he comforted, by which he was comforted in you when he told us of your earnest desire, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced even more. I was so happy when Titus got there and told me how happy he was when he was with you. He came back and brought that report about how, look at it in verse 7, that you had an earnest desire. They wanted to do what was right. They had a mourning, your mourning. They were sorry for what they had done wrong. They had a zeal for Paul. Look in verse 8, just to put this in context. For even if I made you sorry with my letter. Paul was concerned about how that letter would be received. He says, I do not regret it. Though I did regret it. For I perceive that the same epistle made you sorry, though only for a while. But now I rejoice, not that you were made sorry, but that your sorrow led to repentance. For you were made sorry in a godly manner, that you might suffer loss from us in nothing. They responded exactly the way God wanted them to respond to that letter of 1 Corinthians. And so when you read 2 Corinthians, keep in mind that that's what's happening, is that Paul has just received, after a period of just a few months, there's not a great deal of time between 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians. When Paul writes 2 Corinthians, he's in Macedonia. He had just received word from Titus about how his first letter had been received. Look in verse 13, chapter 7. Look in chapter 7 and verse 13. Therefore, we have been comforted in your comfort, and we rejoiced exceedingly more for the joy of Titus, because his spirit has been refreshed by you all. For if in anything I have boasted to him about you, I am not ashamed. If I bragged about you to him, you have lived up to it. And now, because Titus has rejoiced from being with you, now we rejoice at the report that he is bringing back to us. And then Titus, he's mentioned several other times in this book. When Paul sends this letter of 2 Corinthians, he sends it with Titus to take back to them with that report. So perhaps that gives you a little bit of background, a little bit of understanding about this book of 2 Corinthians. When you get to 2 Corinthians, this is a very emotional book. You will see, in this book, you will see Paul's heart and Paul's soul more than you will in any other book. Paul is bearing his soul to these Christians. You remember 1 Corinthians, it was very structured. You could almost divide 1 Corinthians by the chapter and say, okay, here's this subject, and now here's this subject. If you were going to sit down and analyze and try to outline 1 Corinthians, it can be done pretty easily. Can't do that very easily with 2 Corinthians. Paul does not stay on a subject for very long, and he digresses into other matters frequently as you read this book. He is so, his emotions, it's interesting how God uses his writers. 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians are both equally inspired by God. Both of these books are equally the words are equally chosen by God, but God allowed the writer's emotions to come through. And all of this that had been building up in Paul while he was waiting to hear from Titus finally comes out. And so you see a book that is very personal. This book, you learn more about Paul and his heart and his personality in this book than you do in any other book that he wrote. And you'll see that as we study through it. And it's interesting, the balance. There is still in this book a tone of severity. Paul is still very severe with them at times in this book. And yet, you'll get to other parts of the book and you'll see where Paul's love is just passionate for them. And so it goes back and forth. And you really get a glimpse into the heart of a gospel preacher in this book. How he was going back and forth between these thoughts and these emotions that he was trying to deal with. And it's a book that if you want to see the heart of a Christian, how to be a true Christian, this is a great book to read. We don't have time to get into it. We're going to get caught. We've got about 3 minutes. But come back to chapter 1. And let me just introduce a couple of these verses at the beginning of the chapter, beginning of the book, and then we'll break until next week. Does anybody have any comments, any questions, anything that you've thought of while we've been trying to lay some groundwork and some introduction to the book? Tommy?
You don't have to apologize to Jeff and Ryan. You're
Jeff teaching. Okay. Something that had happened with the church in Corinth. And when I say Paul was very severe in this second letter, what Paul learned from Titus when Titus got back, not only that the first letter had been well received, but he also learned that there were some false teachers that had come into the church. And that there were some false teachers that had come into the church and were tearing the church up. And they were coming in and they were claiming to be apostles. Look in chapter 1 and verse 1. Paul says, as he always does, he identifies who's writing. He says, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ. But this time he puts a phrase in here that's not in any other book. Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, by the will of God. Guess who chose Paul to be an apostle? God did. There's these false teachers that had come into the church at Corinth. They were claiming to be apostles. This is Paul's first jab at them. To say, I am an apostle of Jesus Christ, and I'm an apostle by the will of God. What about you? What about these false teachers? They're claiming to be apostles. In fact, what they were doing is they were carrying letters. They were carrying documents. We're going to see that in chapter 3. They're carrying letters to say, here's a letter. It says, I'm an apostle. Did Paul have to have one of those? Did Paul whip out his credential? Well, let me see if I can find it in my wallet here. Yeah, here's my ID card. It says, I'm an apostle. Well, if you couldn't perform miracles like an apostle, you'd have to come up with some other false way to present yourself, wouldn't you? So when they were coming in and trying to present themselves as apostles, they at the same time had to try to discredit the apostle Paul. So everything that he did, they questioned. Everything that he said, they questioned. They tried to discredit Paul and his apostleship to the Christians in Corinth. This book of 2 Corinthians is where Paul presents one of his strongest cases. One of his strongest cases to prove that he is an apostle of Jesus Christ. To stand and to affirm his apostleship. And when you read that, it's not for Paul that he writes that. He's not saying, hey, I'm an apostle. You're hurting my feelings because you're saying I'm not an apostle. It had nothing to do with Paul himself. Paul defends his apostleship strongly in this book because it was being discredited by these false teachers. They wanted to discredit Paul's apostleship because if they could discredit his apostleship, they could discredit his teachings. Paul says, I am an apostle. Don't you dare leave the teachings of God. Read through the first chapter this week, and we will cover the first chapter of this book next week. Thank you for your good attention this morning.